Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 7, season 18. No funnies at the top this week, just genuine concern, sadness for everyone that's affected over in New South Wales. Obviously, we all know what's gone on over the last week or so and the concerns and everything else. And I know rally fans, probably like ourselves across the world, I just waiting and hoping that they get a safe and speedy resolution to the catastrophic events that have occurred over there. And yeah, thoughts to everybody. I've been speaking to several people I know over there, both rally community and non-rally community, and trying to understand perhaps what was likely to happen. And I think it was an absolute no-brainer. I was the only thing I was surprised about, it took as long as to make the decision is what it took. I know every effort was made to try and do something. It's just me and Ryan at the top this week. Hi, Ryan.
Hello.
A tough one for all concerned, really. I can understand why they wanted to perhaps try and do something because of course what it brings to the area, but of course the bigger picture in real life is that, you know, the area is at it on its knees really at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there was no option but to cancel Rally Australia. It's an awful situation. I mean, some of the pictures are just horrendous, and you know, not just people but all the wildlife in the area as well that that are at risk and suffering. And it's very, very sad. And like you said, if anything, I guess it was the only surprise maybe was that they were trying to run something and that, you know, they didn't cancel it immediately, because I think, it's obvious that rallying firstly secondary completely to everything that's going on. And, as important as the World Rally Championship is, it's not important. It's not a life or death situation. And they've had to do what they've done. It's nice to see the World Rally teams doing what they can do and putting a little bit back and meeting with the fire crews and, you know, signing memorabilia and all the rest of it. It's great that they're doing their little bit and giving food and supplies. But like you said, rallying's secondary in these situations.
Couldn't agree more. It has obviously brought an abrupt end to the championship, one which the driver's title was already decided, of course. The manufacturers now, we shared that thing that Gary put out last week, and obviously the graphs and things like that, the excellent stuff that Gary Boyd always does for us, obviously that's now secondary. I suppose a rather reluctant winners in Hyundai, although probably, you know, they were desperate to win it as well, we know.
Yeah, again, it's not the way you want to win something, is it? But nonetheless, it's a championship over a season, not over one rally. And Hyundai looked odds on to win the manufacturer's championship anyway. All they really needed was a sensible performance. So, you know, all credit to Hyundai. They haven't won this by default. They've won this over the other rounds of the season. So it's, from a sporting point of view, it's great, because we've seen Toyota take the driver's title, and we've seen Hyundai take their first manufacturer's title, and you know, they've deserved it. They've fought since they came into the sport. They've had their struggles. They've never really found the pointy tip, have they? They've never really just found the sharp edge to cut through the competition until Andrea Adamo came along, and he seems to have just streamlined the team's performance, made some radical decisions at times, ruffled some feathers, but ultimately the team have performed. And you know, it's not just down to Andrea Adamo. He's come in and certainly made a nice difference, but the foundations to this team have been there over the last 4 or 5 years. They've got an incredible roster of drivers, and you know, they've consistently performed as a team, where, you know, it's safe to say the other teams haven't performed consistently, and I guess on that basis Hyundai are deserved winners.
That takes me to, you know, some thought I had, apart from the obvious, which we've just been talking about, is what drivers were, you know, the certain drivers now that we're perhaps not going to see in their team overalls again now. You know, there might have been, you know, obviously there was only one more event to go. Who are we not going to see in their respective overalls again? Who do you think?
In relation to Hyundai, are we talking about now,
Hyundai first and foremost, because, you know, obviously you've just been talking about their driver roster, of course, massively strengthened by signing the, you know, the 2019 World Rally Champion in Oitanak. You know, the ripple effect for me, obviously, you've got to look at Andreas, perhaps Craig Breen, although, you know, Jack and I did talk about that last week. You know, perhaps there could be something for Craig, a bit part program, obviously doing R5s and maybe waiting for the GOAT to perhaps finally retire at the end of 2020. But, you know, certainly for the likes, immediately first thought was we're not probably going to see Andreas in high and die overalls again.
We've probably answered your own question there, haven't you?
Yeah.
But, and it's, you've got to feel a little bit for Andreas Mikkelsen, haven't you? I mean, he's not actually performed that badly this year. And if you go back to, was it Monte Carlo where he was, you know, fighting for a podium and he took a wheel off, and, he's had, you know, he's been, generally been a good scorer this year. Again, you look at Gary Boyd's figures, and he'd done okay really this year. I mean, Chile didn't turn up. Chile was pointless him going, but he's not had the worst season by any means. But you know, split with his management, just looked a little bit out of sorts. And yeah, I think you're right. I think realistically, we're not going to see him back at Hyundai next year. Will he end up elsewhere? I don't know. It's like I said, it's a sad way for him to bow out of Hyundai, and hopefully it isn't him bowing out of the championship. Although, you know, interestingly, Hayden Padden has come out. You know, we had Hayden on a few weeks ago building up to this big event, and obviously this was his, well, I guess, final chance to stake his claim at the top level, and this isn't, it's not happening now, and he said he just can't go through raising that funding again. So, you know, it could be the end of Hayden in the top line of WRC.
Yeah, literally, I just wrote that down, because obviously Hayden's and got history with Hyundai. Obviously, he was going to be in a Fiesta World Rally Car. I've seen some figures and you know, I may have been off on this, but it was somewhere in the region of €600,000 he's had to find for Finland and for Australia, which is, you know, massive amounts of money. And is there something equally refreshing as well as saddening here in the fact that, you know what, we need to focus our efforts elsewhere now, because obviously he's got a whole thing going on over in New Zealand, and you know, that's obviously going to be his future now, I suppose, you know, getting into that period of acceptance of, you know, and you've been there, right? You know, it is tough, isn't it? Because, you know, all joking aside, You've been on the cusp of things at British level and trying to do JWRC and stuff like that, but you have to make that decision as well of, do you know what, enough's enough?
I would like to say it's comparable, but realistically, it is compared to
someone like me, but you know, you've had to clearly make that decision in your past when you were a career driver, or you were trying to build a career as a driver.
And in fairness to Hayden, he's got obviously some great backers, but just looking for money is a soulless, I mean, you know, we'll talk to another driver in a little while that's been through that this year as well, but it's just a thankless task looking for sponsors, and sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you aren't. And even Hayden with his good backers, you know, it's been a real struggle for him to get back to world level, and it's just the mental strain of ringing people and really begging for money, because it's difficult to give a financial return to a lot of these companies or private individuals that you're approaching. And I can fully understand it. You can only do it for so long. And like you said, he's created a good business for himself, clearly, in New Zealand. He's I'm sure, still got the relationship with Hyundai New Zealand. They're building this electric car. He's got a lot of projects that he can focus on. And like you said, he's maybe thinking longer term now, that if I chase the WRC dream, I'm missing out on building a long-term future. So, yeah, you can absolutely understand that. It is huge amounts of money to compete at this level. And if you're lucky enough to have a drive, great. But if you're trying to get to that stage, or you're still trying to prove yourself, it's a huge amount of sponsorship you need.
Very much so. Very much so. We'll step away slightly from Hyundai. Obviously, you've just mentioned we are going to have Chris Ingram coming up very, very shortly, our current European rally champion. Well, it's nice to say that after we were talking about last week, Jack and I, it's so nice that we managed to tick that box. We're going to come to Chris very, very shortly. But if we can just, obviously you weren't with us last week, Ryan Champion, you were elsewhere, being fanciful. as you normally are. Where was you last week? I can't remember.
I wouldn't say it was fanciful. I was in Woking in Surrey.
Yeah, okay. But,
Fair dues. Next week might be a bit more warm and sunny. But
okay.
Anyway. Where are you next week? Depends when you record. Well, I might be in Kenya.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, that's happening soon, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Well, we had Jeff Mayers on last week talking about Safari Rally next year. So it was just better to get somebody else other than you to talk about it, I'll be honest.
But somebody who actually knows what's going on in Kenya.
Quite important. But just very, very briefly before we cut over and we get Chris on the line. Some of the obviously there's been the jungle drums with regards to the Toyota lineup and Elvin. Again, that hasn't seemed to have gone away. I've had a few messages from certain people who I know and kind of respect quite highly, and it hasn't gone away yet, right?
Well, he's had a strong season on pace, and
not according to somebody that normally listens to the program from the other side of the world. But hey, we hope he's all right. All jokers out, I hope you're all right if you are in that part of the world. But yeah, go on. Sorry, continue.
Well, I'd be the first to say he hasn't been consistently fast on every rally, but it's coming. The more years he's in the WRC, the more consistent he is. And we've seen some incredible pace. Don't forget, he should have won in Corsica. Arguably could have won Wales Rally GB. And if he'd won two rallies by now, it'd be a different conversation, wouldn't it? Wow, it would be interesting to see him in a Toyota, you'd have to say. An undoubted top line car, then things have to happen. But there's a lot of pressure to deal with at that point as well. So it's definitely not a foregone conclusion what would happen at that point. But it seems to have gone a little bit quieter on the Auger story to Toyota. But
I did see something on that, right, just very, very briefly, that apparently, and again, it's one of those, when you see links and stuff on Twitter and various other formats, something to do with a clause in a Citroen contract that if it's broken or whatever, he has to have 12 months out. So that could put paid to, a Toyota seat. But again, everything's buyable, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it is.
Absolutely. I'm sure there'd be a price that Citroen would settle at, especially as I think we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, Pierre Bodard has been open saying that they haven't got the budget to run three cars. But having said that, if you're only going to run two cars, you want Sebastien Ogier in one of them, don't you? So I'm sure he would be very, very reluctant to let him go as long as they've got a World Championship program. We've moved away from it, but we touched on it. Craig Breen, I'd like to see Craig get something. I think he will, because as we've touched on, whilst Hyundai have this incredible lineup now, they're still in the same position with Loeb and Sordor, who don't want to go to certain rallies. So maybe Craig Breen can just hang on in there, like you said, with an R5 program, with a small WRC program, and wait until maybe one or both of those guys move on.
There you go. Listen, this seemed like a really, really good point to go to a break, and we are going to come back with our current European Rally champion, Chris Ingram.
This is Absolute Rally.
Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And as mentioned at the top, we have got... We had a part-time driver with me at the top. No, he hasn't really won anything of note, Ryan Champion, despite all the smoke blew up his backside at the earlier bit of the podcast. So we thought we'd get somebody on who is actually a champion, a European champion, not just champion by name, an actual champion. So we've got Chris Ingram with us. Hello, Chris.
How you doing?
We're good. Ryan Champion, are you still speaking to me?
Well, I'm used to the abuse by now, aren't I? So, yeah. amazing result, Chris. I mean, after the year you've had, can you actually believe, firstly, it's over, and secondly, that you've won the European Championship?
No. It's very, very slowly starting to sink in. I just got back home late last night and had a lie-in, and then you're the first guys I've spoken to. So when you guys say it, it sounds amazing, doesn't it?
Well, it does sound amazing. I mean, it is amazing, but it's probably difficult to put into words for you, because it's just not been an easy season from the start, has it? You know, from funding, from results, from you know, you've just had to work so hard to make this happen.
Yeah, definitely. Like, before the season, I remember being with you, Ryan, in Sweden, and I was just gutted because I just didn't think I could carry on. And then rally by rally, we struggled to find a way, and without the help of TalkSport, none of it would have been possible. They've just been so, so good to me and helped me so much. But rally by rally, sort of got through and then fell into such a great position, you know, and probably after Barron, when we lost the juniors by 0.3 of a second, junior championship, but we fell into the championship lead. And it just, you know, we just had to go and win it then.
And I mean, we'll talk about funding in a minute, but, you know, there was a couple of comments on social media, and I'm sure you've had this, that, you know, you didn't win rallies during the season, but you ended up in a position where you just had to go for the championship, didn't you? I mean, you were just having to do the minimum. You just wanted the results at the end.
Yeah, exactly. And we did, you know, who cares that we didn't win a rally? We were focused on the championship. I didn't put a scratch on the car all year, and it doesn't matter, does it? If you know, there were so many times when we could have potentially won. You know, anyone could have won in Hungary who didn't get a puncher, for example. But it just doesn't matter. We won the title, and that's all that'll ever matter now, that our names will be on that trophy forever.
And I think you're quite right. You've done it. You've won the championship. So that's to win a championship, you've got to score consistently, and that's what you did. And you know, and hopefully in the future you'll get a chance to show your speed when you can. But you know, try and put it into words how difficult it's been, because it's been a rally by rally basis to get to the start, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And early on in the season, I felt like, you know, everyone was really unhappy with me. I'd not found the budget. I was under so much financial pressure, and it was sort of at a point where, you know, am I just getting myself into an even bigger mess now? Because I can't perform. I can't possibly crash the car, because that'll definitely be the end. And it's just the pressures and the stress have just been immense. But then I sort of turned the corner at Barron, right, round six. Because it was just the pressure was making me drive slower, because I was just so tense in the car. And then on the last three rounds, I've just sort of got it back and just tried to relax as much as I possibly could, which was the hardest thing ever.
Do you think you've learned from that experience, though? Because it's only natural, you know, we've all been there in our own cars where you don't crash it because you can't afford to carry on. But do you think you've grown from that experience, if you like?
Massively, yeah. Like, before Hungary, you know, when we were doing the recce, it was probably the most tricky rally I've ever done. Well, definitely the most tricky rally I've ever done. The conditions were horrific. Half of the rally was gravel on tarmac tyres. And I, on the recce, I was scared that, you know, you can't push on this event, you just go off. But then by the time I got in the car, I just knew I wasn't going to go off. And I've not gone off all year or for the last two or three years.
I mean,
sometimes when you've not driven the rally car for months, you have these doubts, don't you, I think?
Yeah, of course. And again, you've not had the testing mileage in the car also. But I mean, tell us a little bit about the conditions. It just looked like one of the worst rallies in the world. And I'm sure if you could have done it, you'd have put gravel tyres on the thing.
To be honest, the stages were... They were enjoyable, but they were unbelievably tricky. The mud and every corner was different. It was either completely muddy, there was gravel, it was wet with logs. You know, they had these big logs that they were putting on the inside of corners to stop cutting. But of course, they were only on half the corners. It was the trickiest rally ever. Quite dangerous, but you know, everyone was moaning about the rally, all the ERC regulars, but I thought it was a good challenge, to be honest. It was foggy on the dark. It was a bit of everything, so I did enjoy it.
So it was a proper rally then, that's what you're saying. But there was one bit I saw the coverage on Eurosport, and it was a fairly innocuous spin, but it did look like there was a tree coming pretty quickly to you on the left hand side.
Oh yeah. So on Sunday morning we literally just had to finish, as if I put it that easily. We just had to keep that third position, and I think we were second at the time, we had a couple of minutes over third. On the first stage, I spun. It was just out of nowhere, really. It's the first mistake I've made in a while. And then on stage two, we just got a puncher, which, no idea how, just on the long gravel section, driving pretty slowly. So it all started to go a bit mental. It was just the most dramatic day ever.
And then, of course, you come to the stop line with a puncture. I mean, I guess you had no idea how much time you'd lost. You had no idea where you are at all. I guess you just thought you'd lost it at that point.
Oh, my God, yeah. So the last stage is 27 kilometres with 10 kilometres of gravel in the middle. And we just, because that's where we got the puncture early on in the day, on the first pass. We just sort of said, we've got to literally drive through this at recce speed to make sure we don't, and we still got a puncture. But we carried on for about 12K on the puncture, because we knew if we stopped to change it, it'd be at least a minute and a half in the dark, and that would have dropped us down to fourth anyway. So we thought, we just got to carry on. And the end of the stage was foggy, horrific rain. We thought, there's a chance that we might not lose so much time in those conditions. So we carried on, and we lost. I'd say we actually did well to not lose so much time, but Callum Devine, who was fifth, put in an unbelievable time and jumped us. I think he took 2.5 minutes out of us and shot right up into third. So we dropped down to fourth, and we thought we'd lost it from that. But then, so we were just devastated, sat in the car, drove down the road, started changing the puncture, and then some photographers came running down and said, Lucky Nuts had a puncture. And it was just mad, because, of course, we only had to get a podium, but with us in fourth, Lucky Nuts would have had to finish second for us to win, which he ended up doing. So it was just a mental, unforgettable moment of, because we didn't know whether Lucky Nuts could still won or what. It was just, no one knew what was going on. It was mad.
Chris, if I can ask you, obviously you've just been talking about the conversation that goes on in the car about, you know, well, we worked out it was better to carry on and stuff like that. Is that Ross being, you know, the you know, you gave massive credit to Ross straight away when people started speaking to you at stage N. Was that a moment where Ross is actually guiding you and saying, right, this is it, this is how we're going to do it? Or, you know, what tends to happen at that moment when you realise you've got a puncture and a conversation needs to happen?
To be fair to Ross, he always wants me to just carry on. I don't know if that's because he doesn't want to get his hands dirty, but it was getting to the point where I was struggling quite a lot and having moments. I thought, JL, do you think we should stop and change it? But, you know, then the weather got really bad and we thought, you know, we might just nip this if everyone's struggling in the fog. So it was a tough one, but we just carried on in the end. We just wanted to get to the end.
Just picking up on something you said there a minute ago, Chris, and like, you've obviously practiced your tyre changes, because, Tony, have you ever changed a tyre in a minute and a half in the dark?
I've got a full set of wheels off a car and a battery.
No, in fairness, I wasn't. It was going to be a genuine question, but seems like you went down that line of questioning and you opened yourself right up, didn't you?
I know, anyway. Thank you. No, I haven't in answer to your question.
But Chris, you must have spent a lot of time practicing that.
Fairly, we probably do like an hour of practice before each rally, so not massively, but the first puncher we had on Sunday on that stage, I carried on for probably lost about 15-20 seconds. I thought, you know, we've got to change it. So we literally just stopped in the middle of the road, and we changed it in about a minute 30. And then we carried on, and then I went round a hairpin left and I saw Lucky Nook was probably about 10 seconds behind us. So that was probably one of the best changes we've done. But it's just a nightmare when, you know, the punch and change is actually all right, but then when you get back in the car and you're putting your belts on, it seems like it's just, you're just losing so much time putting your seatbelts back on.
Where did the hour come from, the magic hour of, because that's, you know, that's a wow moment. When you said that then, and this is the things that perhaps, and we have listeners, Chris, across the board, we have people who compete, we have people who are marshals and everything else. And the obvious thing about rallying, people just assume you're in the car, you go as quickly as you can, you've got a race budget and everything else. The little things that make the big things. And to me, that's a little thing, or certainly a smaller thing than everything else. But to spend an hour before each event practicing, who's made you do that, Chris? Who's got you and said, right?
The team, and we've been very lucky to have a Skoda engineer on some events this year, and they've really helped us understand, you know, what the drivers are doing at the top level and what we need to really improve on, you know, these little things, as exactly as you said, Tony.
I was amazed when you said that. I even just scribbled it down. I thought, I've got to come back to that. Can I take you back to your last service, Chris? Because I've known you for a long time. It's fair to say that, isn't it? So I've seen your roller coaster. We've had various conversations. I said this on last week's podcast when I was talking about you. So who's looking after you, Chris, in your last service, when you know what you've got to go out and do, and you know, at that point, you know, the permutations were still very much in your favour. You know, it started to unravel a little bit, as you've explained, when punctures started to happen and things like that. And you thought perhaps it hadn't happened, but certainly in the last service, you thought, all I've got to do is hold station. Who's talking to you, Chris? Who sat you down and went, right, just keep doing what you've been doing? Who's having that conversation with you?
I think because it was so much to the whole team as well, I think everyone was a bit nervous, to be fair. But the Skoda engineer, Sergio, you know, he was saying to me, you've done a great job, so all you need to do is keep doing that. And going out to the last few stages, the anxiety and the tension was just horrific. You know, just before I was about to start the last stage, even though I'd driven well all rally, I was worried about getting the puncher. I thought, please don't get a puncher. And it's just amazing how we got one. And I drove so slow, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Half of me was saying, please don't let us get a puncher. The other half of me, I was just telling myself, it's going to be okay. This is our time and we deserve this now.
Well,
it was the bloody hardest moment of my life before that last stage.
I was going to come to that. Your career in ERC now goes back, must be what, 5 years maybe? Thinking back to obviously when you made the jump. When you started ERC 5 years ago, and I know it sounds like a really obvious question, did you go into ERC planning to be ERC champion, or was it very much a very different path you had in your mind when you first started the championship?
When I first started, I suppose I wanted to just try to become a professional driver.
Okay.
But then as the years went by, I thought it sort of became a dream, like the European Rally Championship would be an incredible thing to win. Because, you know, you might never get the chance to do the World Championship. The European Rally Championship is the next best thing you could win. And a Brit's not won it for 50 years. It sort of just became an ambition.
Okay. Which is admirable. And it's quite interesting there that you mentioned the fact that, you know, something might be, you know, you've just mentioned about WRC maybe being, you know, unachievable to some degree. We've just been talking before you came on about, you know, Hayden Padden and what he's gone through over the last 12, 18 months and why he's gone through raising funds and things like that and why, you know, he may have to accept the fact now that, you know, he's raised €600,000 to do two WRC events this year that he hasn't been able to do now for various sad circumstances, obviously, the latter one being Rally Australia and the unfortunate off in Finland. That's a similar journey to what you've been on. Now, you've just mentioned that might be unachievable for you now, but you're now a European champion. And I speculated last week that there would be no more fitting tribute to Škoda Motorsport. In fact, that they, you know, they should be looking at the ERC and what young drivers are doing in it, because, you know, it's been a really good proving ground for young drivers to go through Škoda Motorsport. And that is that something that you even allowed yourself to think about now, the fact that you can knock on a door and say, well, I'm a European rally champion?
I think 100%, and yeah, I just think I've always been quite realistic, and I think in this sport, it's always been the case that there's always guys who have had it easier than others who they're just going to get the chance no matter what. And I've just got to be true to myself and do the best I possibly can and be happy with whatever opportunity that comes up, really. And I'll just work incredibly hard over winter now and see what happens.
TalkSport have become, I suppose you've become part of their family as much as they've become part of yours. We've seen the team grow. Obviously, they've got great heritage in circuit racing, but now I suppose for them as well, you've also played your part as well, because you've helped establish them as a major player with R5 and Škoda and everything else. That must be incredibly satisfying to give something back to them as well.
Oh, massively, yeah. I mean, this never would have been possible without them. They've helped me achieve one of my biggest dreams. So you know, the fact that I've helped put them on the map a bit in rallying is a, like you said, it's so satisfying to give that back to them, and just to make them all proud, really, was an amazing feeling. And to everyone that supported, so many people supported me, just to make everyone happy was a big thing for me.
I think the support you've had from, and this is the other thing, I suppose, when you talk about, obviously, of doing the European Rally Championship, that your supporters and the people who've kind of got behind you are not just UK-based. You've touched people in various parts of Europe, and, you know, they've also got on board and helped you compete this monumental task when you sit down and you work out what you've got to raise. But, you know, those, you know, €10, those €20, those €30, all made a difference, and they all created the European champion.
Exactly. And even though I'm a proud Brit, it wouldn't have been fair to just go on about that, because so many people from across Europe and even Russia and America have actually helped. So, you know, even though I'm the first Brit to do it in so long, it's for everyone that's helped me and been a part of it. And I'm just so grateful to everyone.
I think the other thing which I was quite touched about when I seen the stage end, obviously we've mentioned Ross, of course, and Ross kind of being the steady in hand, obviously, when Chris Rawls was talking to you and you weren't quite sure what to do with yourself, you were turning to Ross. Ross was giving you a hug, and then once you were sorted, Ross broke as well. He still had to make sure his driver was okay before he had his moments, which I thought was lovely and touching.
Definitely, 100%. First time I've ever seen such emotion from Ross. He's usually the most cool, collected character ever. But he was sobbing like a baby. It's an amazing memory.
It's an incredibly, you know, he's an incredibly unassuming character as well. Obviously, you know, he's been with you a couple of years now, and he's not, you know, he's not one that kind of seeks the limelight in any way, shape or form. He's very much a head down, backside up type of co-driver. And as you say, just kind of buckled down. So, you know, to see an unsung hero as well, you know, share that glory with you, was fantastic.
100%, yeah. is the best moment of our lives, and I'm just so happy that we managed to do it in the end.
Fantastic.
The biggest relief ever.
Chris, I'm going to ask you now, what does a European rally champion do on a, well, today we record this on a Wednesday. What does he normally do on a Wednesday?
Today I'm absolutely destroyed from what we've been through this last season. Well, especially last week, just knackered, but I'm just catching up with everyone and thanking everyone who supported me. Just chilling really and trying to also publicise it as much as we can to help us for next year.
Of course, well, obviously we're gonna share it round, and congratulations to you, to the family, to Ross, to all the supporters, obviously to TalkSport as well. I think it's a great story, and I'm really excited to see what happens next for you, Chris, because that was
thanks so much.
That was the other thing
thanks
as well. We Jack and I were talking about it last week. And no matter what happened, I'll tell you exactly what I said, because I'm sure you were busy. You weren't listening to our podcast last week. I said, I just hope Chris is okay, whatever happens, whether it's win, lose or draw. I just hope Chris is okay. So I'm glad you're okay, mate.
Thanks,
and I'm glad
mate.
You won. Ryan
Thanks
Champion,
so
no problem at all. Ryan Champion, have you got anything else you want to add to the story of Mr. England?
No, I don't.
Should we let
him
go and rest?
I think it's quite funny that the last European champion, obviously British European champion, we should say, is Vic Elford, who was a Porsche driver, and Chris started the year by driving some old Porsches. So there we go. It went full circle.
Definitely. And we had below zero on the car as well. I don't know if you saw it, but
brilliant.
Hopefully we'll be back in Sweden this winter.
Fantastic. Listen, Chris, go and chill out. Please, as I say, send our best to the family there and to your old man and everything else who obviously has been supporting you from day one. It's a great story.
I've still not seen him yet.
Haven't you?
Really? Last night. I'm going to see him tonight.
Good stuff.
I've got an interview with ITV and then going to see the family. So.
All right.
Looking forward. Thanks so much, guys.
Send our best. Folks, we're going to be back with David again after this break.
This is Absolute Rally. Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It was great to have Chris Ingram on. Probably the most relaxed I think we've had him. Finally, he's been able to chill out. It's still obviously clearly not quite fully hit him. We will get him back, obviously, before the start of whatever his next season is, Ryan Champion. But you'll be playing with him on Frozen Lakes in a couple of months' time, so you'll have to keep him out of mischief.
Well, you never know. He might be busy testing. But yeah, I would imagine. I'd imagine all being well, he'll be with us in Sweden at some point. Which it's. I think regardless as well of what driving you do, any driving you can do in the winter is good for keeping you sharp. So I'm sure if he isn't testing, he'll be out with us.
Yeah, happy days. Happy days. A couple of things I wanted to mention, right? Not quite any other business. I'm going to do in any other business. We've got those all saved. They're safe. They're over there. The candidate event, if we can call it that, over in Japan, ran, I think it was last week. And interesting, obviously, it was a Toyota on the podium there with Katsuta on the top step. But what got me about all that was the fact that the press conference had both Tommy Mäkinen and Petter Solberg in it, because obviously Subaru have got great interest in the rally running over there again, and I think they're maybe involved in the sponsorship of the event. I'm not entirely sure, but Petter was very much there in his Subaru get-up, obviously off the back of what he's also doing with Oliver over in the States as well, and fond memories, and only good things seem to be coming out of Japan with regards to the candidate event and obviously the impending arrival back in WRC.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before, haven't we? I think it's great for the championship that Japan is coming back. You know, we're seeing a good commitment, obviously, from Toyota, and they wanted to see it back in there. As you said, they They sent Takamoto to the rally and supported it as well. Hiroki Arai, I think, was second on the event. Obviously, he was a Toyota Junior as well, wasn't he, until recently?
Well, do you know what was quite funny is that I also seen pictures of Petta and Toshi, because obviously they were teammates, of course, with ProDrive and Subaru as well. And I've seen some images out for those two guys together as well. So lots of connections
and,
over the
and
years.
And also Toshi Arai, of course, was doing the rally in a Subaru.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was also in the ProDrive days, you know, in the World Rally Cars when Petta was there.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. The late great Roger Freeman, of course, who I think it was originally. Who sat with, was it when he first went into a World Cup? Not entirely sure, but, yeah, I was fortunate enough to, I did work with Toshi in his later years in PWRC with Mike Corner, who was his coordinator.
Who co-drove for me on the second rally I ever did.
There you go. See, it's all connected, right? If you look hard enough, all the connections are there.
Well, here's one for you. I don't know how many cars finished, in Japan. Not many, I don't think, but did you see who finished fourth overall? In a Toyota GT86.
Was it, it was a Finnish driver.
It was.
And I can see the name, but I can't say it, which to be fair, for podcasting, is awful. So, you're just going to tell us, Kovalainen?
Yeah, it was F1 driver Heikki Kovalainen, the ex-F1 driver, I should say, yeah. who's sort of built himself a career in Japan since he left Formula 1, and he seems to be enjoying his rallying. So
Fair play, you don't normally do roundy-roundy, Jack's not here.
Well, it's not roundy-roundy because he was doing a rally now. And I think, you know, like you said, it's coming back to the championship, and some crews did the recce as well. I saw that Elvin Evans and Scott Martin have been there doing the recce. So, you know, important for them to get a flavour of what it's like for next year. So I guess because the other thing, obviously, Japan has never been around the World Championship on tarmac. It's always been a gravel rally. So it will be a completely new event to the championship.
It was interesting. I seen, or read rather, an interview with Katsuta after the event where he was comparing it. People talked about Corsica being the rally of, you know, 10,000 corners or whatever. I think we've got a few more in Japan. So it's going to be one of those intense events where it's going to be perhaps a busy one, maybe very, very shrewd of Scott Martin going over there with, of course, with Elvin. It could be one of those ones which, well, it sounds like it's going to be tough anyway.
Well, great. You know, we're all for, if we're going to have different rallies in the championship, they need to provide a different challenge, don't they? So, yeah, if it's a rally of the 20,000 corners, then great.
Bring it on. Bring it on, as they say. We touched upon it right at the beginning, Ryan Champion. Are we gonna dare speculate with regards to where who's gonna be where come the start of next year, or are we just gonna just give up on it as a bad job?
Well,
we never get it right.
No, exactly. We might as well, because it's not like anybody expects us to get things right or anybody ever listens to what we say because they know we're getting it wrong.
Do you know what? It did make me laugh. Right, on Twitter yesterday, I'm sure most people who listen to this also follow us on Twitter. But thank you, by the way, the ones who voted on the poll for making me have to write another Christmas quiz. Really appreciate that. Not. But somebody said about using the same questions as what the late, great Henry Hill Prost had sent him for us. And using them again because you probably still wouldn't get them right.
I did see that, yeah.
Cruel.
Probably give Henry a wry smile. Right smile, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the work has already begun on the bloody Christmas quiz. That's all I'm going to say. I think it would have been far more interesting, right? And I said this, and I know we always give each other a hard time. I'm not just saying this, but I sometimes think we all forget. I don't know whether you listened to what I said last week, but we forget about the experiences you've had doing rallies and then rally cars and working with teams and everything else. We forget, obviously, Trevor's history in the sport. We forget, obviously, you know, Jack's involvement, what he's wrote about. And we forget that I just make up the numbers sometimes. But where I'm going with this is that, you know, everybody has got a different experience who's involved in the podcast. Obviously, I've been involved in the business side and done a bit of competing and stuff like that. Jack's obviously a journalist. Trevor's a very experienced world championship co-driver. You've got your history of driving various cars, well, rally cars, Group N cars, represent manufacturers and stuff like that. And I guess sometimes there's certain people who listen to the podcast who perhaps maybe didn't realize that. And it would have been quite nice to give them the opportunity to perhaps ask questions. That's where it came from.
I thought they can look at on the Facebook page, Pictures of Rallying, Dave Welford's site. He puts loads of good rallying pictures on. He's done a Q&A, so they can see it all there, can't they? You know, the one that you've given me abuse about, which even included Absolute Rally.
I'm sorry, mate. I'm sorry. It just did make me laugh. Do you know what? It made me laugh because I knew it would have made you laugh. That was more to do with it.
It's expected.
Absolutely. And if he'd done it with me, one, I would have been really shocked that he'd asked.
Well, maybe if you're lucky, because it's a new listener, and maybe if he gets us more listeners, you know, he could do a Q&A with Tony Simpson.
Who's he?
Well, that's obviously what I'll put at that point.
Yeah.
Well, he's the host of Absolute Rally. That's what you're known for now.
Is that what I'm known for?
I think probably, yeah.
Scary. Wow. I used to be known for so many other things as well.
No, this is by far your greatest achievement.
Thanks, mate. I'm going to throw those trophies in the bin because Ryan Champion said so. They weren't trophies for rallying, by the way. I was talking about like me swimming me 10 lengths and that type of thing. But still, there you go. We get distracted, Ryan Champion, far too easily on this podcast. Back to the subject in hand, back to rallying. So we are literally going to leave the whole speculation of seeing who's where next year then. Maybe until we're all on. Maybe we need to do that. Maybe that could be a quiz question.
Yeah, it could be. I think things will slowly start to fall into place, won't they?
I think so now. I think it was always going to be critical no matter what after Rally Australia. And obviously, all things considered, you know, that time is now really, isn't it? You know, the championship is over and you know, that's kind of it. And, you know, people are preparing already for 2020. So, you know, I guess there'll be contracts that people would need to be released from to do early testing and things like that. That's always seems to be a thing, doesn't it? A driver getting early released. I just imagine that, right? But over the years, there always seems to be drivers that leave other teams that have to request to have early release to do testing. Why don't they just do the contracts until the end of the last event? Surely that would make life so much easier.
Well, I guess having said that, if a manufacturer wins a championship or a driver wins a championship, they want to be able to use them till the end of the year at the very least, don't they? So I'm sure Toyota are quite keen to keep Oi Tanak as a Toyota driver for a while to promote what he's done. But I see he was one of the drivers who, as he says, looking for the earliest possible chance to test the Hyundai this year.
Yeah. So we'll stay away from the speculation. I will make it a quiz question and maybe award retrospective points come January. Maybe that's the way we'll get round it. Any other business, Ryan Champion, for this week? I assume you've got a stellar one because you weren't with us last week.
Well, I was just a bit of a roundup on last weekend's events. It's something that hopefully Motorsport UK have in hand because when I was at the Rally Forum earlier this year, somebody, you know, did ask Dave Richards how on earth he could allow Wales' first closed road rally to happen on the same weekend as the Three Shires that was just across the border. And then last weekend we had the Poker Stars, one of Isle of Man's biggest rallies, on the same weekend as the Jim Clark, which was making its comeback to the rallying scene. And it needs to be avoided at all costs, doesn't it? When you've got, there's only so many people with good tarmac cars that can go and do these rallies. So these need to be separated, but nonetheless, fantastic to see the Jim Clark rally back. It was an integral part of the British Rally Championship for so many years in the Duns area. You know, it became our own mini Ypres for a while, particularly in the days of the F2 cars when SEAT were sponsoring it and, you know, and they put a lot of PR around the rally. It's been a big battle for everybody in motorsport really to get this rally to run again. We know about the terrible accident that caused the stoppage of the event, and it's meant that it hasn't run for a few years, but it is back. We've seen Mull this year as well, but you know, I hope the Jim Clark can really build on this, and I think it'd be fantastic eventually to hopefully see it back in the British Championship. We'll not go down that line again, that the British Championship maybe isn't the same as when the Jim Clark left it, but nonetheless, great to see the Jim Clark back. Great performance by David Bogie in his Mark II Escort to take the fight to Josh Moffat, who won the rally in the latest version of M Sport's R5 car. And then a local driver, Dale Robertson, was third with Stu Loudon alongside, and a great performance by Ross Hunter, who finished fifth.
I've got a bit of a story about Ross.
Go on.
Because I've rallied against Ross probably about 7 or 8 years ago when he had a 205.
But he still has a 205.
Yeah. And, you look at Ross, and again, I class Ross as a mate. Ross is a big lad, I think it's fair to say. He's not a racing snake. But I can remember doing Jim Clark with him, competing against him when I was in the Group NST and he had the 205. And the times he could put in that 205 on Jim Clark was phenomenal. Phenomenal. I haven't got anything to hand, but I can remember one of those wow moments, because I think when he first came in and did the BRC Challenge, nobody really knew who he was. And we got to Jim Clark and it was like, Jesus, who's this fella? He is absolutely rapid. So it was actually amazing to see him. And I think he was in the Don Buckley IRS rental car, and, fantastic drive. Great to see him in a proper car, but geez, he can pedal a 205 as well.
Well, quite a 205 it is as well, but I was chatting to his dad in Spain, funnily enough, and he said, I don't know if we've done the right thing renting an R5 car, but thankfully they did do the right thing, and he had a great performance, so good for him. But just great to see, you know, rallies like this back again, and both Mull and the Jim Clark ran very well, and let's hope they go from strength to strength.
I couldn't agree more. And it was kind of on my pad as well. I think Aaron Newby won Poker Stars with one of my old co-drivers alongside Rob Fagg. Congratulations to them. The conditions looked terrible, I think it's fair to say.
It looked like it was snowing at one point, I think.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where you think, oh, I'd love to be doing the Manx. And then you see the pictures coming and go, yeah, I'm not really sure I'd love to be doing the Manx right now. It was one of those ones. But just going back to Jim Clark, I think it is moving to, they were very keen once they got things in place to get the rally to run again and get it back kind of running again. I think it is moving to, I think it's May next year, right?
So, yes, yeah, I think it is, yeah.
So it's kind of a bit more where it used to be. And again, I can imagine that to be an event which is going to be inundated with entries. I really do. As you've just touched upon there, there's only so many people with proper tarmac cars, and I think probably their loyalties were split on that particular weekend. And obviously, I think Jim Clark came about, I think it was only announced maybe 4 or 5 months ago, wasn't it, right? If memory serves. It wasn't one that's been on the calendar all year. So good for them to get themselves going again. I think it was some new organising guys as well behind it. So fantastic, as you say. So yeah, agree with that 100%.
And another event with a great history that ran last weekend as well is the Wydene. So another gravel rally, and again, it looked like horrendous conditions, but you know, the Wydene's had its own issues as well, and another famous rally that's made its way back again. So that's great too.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. My only other business is, you know, when you do this thing on Facebook where you can kind of look back at your kind of timeline of what happened on this day, you know, 4 or 5 years ago or whatever it is. And mine today was full of stuff of 2015 of doing Rally GB. In the last year of the homologation of the Fiesta ST, the international homologation of the Fiesta ST, which obviously I was quite synonymous with for a number of years of driving one in various championships and stuff like that. And it's kind of, for me, it's almost like the end of an era when I think back to it now. And I didn't perhaps realize at the time, obviously we moved our car on right, and we got an R2 car, which was great because I thought, brilliant, you know, we're good to go. We can still do international events, until you realise that you've got to get an FIA bag tank now, which is €4,500 to add to the car. Now, unless you buy a car with one in, you know, the likelihood of a club and being able to go out and spend €4,500 on a fuel tank is highly unlikely, really. And, you know, it was deferred, that ruling coming in, for a year or two, because I seem to remember it coming in around 16. It was going to come in even for British Rally Championship at the time, and it was deferred. So, yeah, I just wonder, and you've drove Group N cars and, you know, over the years and stuff like that. I just again, just the sad demise of being able to, you know, you kind of your normal competitor. We've been talking about raising budgets of being able to do international rally with an affordable car.
But now you just do it as a non-homologated car, don't you? And then you can do it anyway, because that seems to be what's happening on each rally, including our own World Rally GB. So, you can't, like you said, you're not in the main rally as such, but you can still do the main rally.
Yeah, well, you still miss out, you know, you miss the first day. And, you know, if I'm going to do a World Championship event, I don't want to be doing the bridesmaid, which would have sounded really wrong. I only want to be doing the bride, right? I don't want to be doing the bridesmaid event, so to speak. So, yeah, there's a reason why you go to all that effort to go and do a World Championship event, and you want to do everything that goes with it. You want to deal with the bureaucracy that you also have to deal with of having to have a tracker in your car and all those other things, and putting, was it a €3,000 deposit down last time I did it on a credit card? I think it was with SIS. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. Where I'm going with this, right, is that, you know, internationally, big international events for people with cheap cars, cheap homologated cars, I think the ship is very much sailed, and I think it's all but over now.
And there's less and less cars homologated, isn't there? That's the thing, you know, and less cars have been produced to be homologated. And like you said, now we've sort of got these very defined categories. There's not so many cars that you can choose from in there. So, I don't think we've got time to discuss homologation as in any other business.
No, I think we'll just leave it there. All it was is that we had a fantastic, I ended up sticking it on its roof on the second day, it has to be said, but we had a fantastic rally. Day one, day two, there was about three or four STs, and we all went at it hammer and tong. And I think I was leading at the end of day one, and we were only a handful of seconds up on the Tim Rogers, who was second in another ST, but we were we were beating DS3s and everything. We had a fantastic ding-dong battle, and they're such great little cars and really, really affordable. I just think there's something a little bit sad that, you know, that we're losing this element of the sport. But maybe that's just me. Anyway, folks, we were going to have David Higgins in this week's podcast. You heard it, probably mentioned it when I was talking to Chris Ingram earlier on. We're probably going to have David in next week's episode now. We're going to probably record that, and we'll add that into next week's episode, because we're going to catch David a little bit later on, and we're probably going to miss the cutoff now for LR producers to put this together. So if you're waiting for David to come along, David will be along in next week's episode anyway. So Ryan Champion, I'm going to let you go in pack. Obviously, you're going to be packing suntan oil and thongs, and I mean thongs in the sense of flip flops, not underwear. Getting ready to travel to Kenya.
You don't get much chance to wear flip flops there, but you never know. Might get a chance to sit by the pool for an hour or so. But busy period. So I'm going out with Team Tuttle again, and I think we have something like 12 cars in total on the rally. So a little bit of testing beforehand, and a good entry for the rally as ever, certainly at the front. It's not a big rally this year, but former winners Stig Blomqvist, Ian Duncan, Flash Tundo, all the front running guys that normally do the rally there. So it should be fun.
Great stuff. Folks, we do appreciate the download, and we do appreciate all the nice comments that have been coming our way on social media recently. I don't know where it's come from, but thank you so much. It does make a difference. It does kind of fuel us to keep doing this for you. And of course, along with the guys at Kielder, we wouldn't be here without them, and we wouldn't be here without you guys listening, because as I always say, it would just be, in this instance, just be two blokes talking about rallying with nobody listening. So the downloads continue to grow, the fan base continues to grow, and the love of doing this continues to grow, because it is tough to put together sometimes, but we wouldn't have it any other way. And so we appreciate the fact that you recognise and you are downloading it, and you are listening in exotic places. As somebody tweeted today, Ryan Champion, Bora Bora, there you go.
Nice.
Nice way to finish off. So the people in Bora Bora, thank you for the download. We do appreciate it. Folks, we will be back same time, same place, in the podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.